Chapter 10, The Real Shock and Awe. Harlan Ullman is what is referred to as a defense intellectual, although how the words defense and intellectual would apply here is beyond me. He was the Navy's head of extended planning and taught at the National War College. His vision of high-tech war, he calls it rapid dominance or shock and awe. The idea is to scare the enemy to death. To win, you don't need to inflict physical pain and destruction. Just the fear of pain and the massive confusion it creates is enough. Ullman was ready to use every kind of weapon to accomplish this. He once said that it would be a good idea to use electromagnetic waves that attack people's neurological systems to control the will and perception of adversaries. By applying a regime of shock and awe, it is about affecting behavior. When it comes to Iraq, Ullman liked the idea of cruise missiles, lots of them, right away. CBS News reported that Ullman's ideas are the basis for the Pentagon's war plan. The U.S. smashed Baghdad with up to 800 cruise missiles in the first 2 days of the war. That's about one every 4 minutes, day and night, for 48 hours. Pretty good war planning, especially if you're dealing with an equivalent enemy that was capable of doing the same thing to you. As defense in a declared war with such an enemy, this might be considered considerable, but as an attack upon innocent citizens of a country with very little ability to wage war, especially against such a superpower as USA, this is an outrage and a crime against humanity. It's like a grown man claiming that a baby had hit him with his rattle and he nuked the baby to retaliate. The word claim is very applicable in this case because it relates to a series of bogus claims that the world watched helplessly as they developed from the 9/11 debacle to an attack on Afghanistan and later Saddam's Iraq due to the unproved accusations that weapons of mass destruction were being deployed there. Those weapons were used upon the accused by the accuser, and some lame attempts were made to convince the world viewing this that this type of attack was legal, proper, and just. The real shock and awe occurred for me just the last 2 weeks as I uncovered dozens of conspiracy movies that have outlined the truth about not only 9/11, but a great variety of questions that I have had for years. I was almost unable to continue this writing and nearly came to the conclusion that I best keep my mouth shut, or rather my typewriter shut, and forget this entire effort. Conspiracy movies sometimes tend to go overboard, and every foul event of history is used for evidence against the powers that be. But even these must be examined closely for this problem. The world, as I see it, is a fair and wonderful place, and my life has been an idyllic experience from my childhood until now, and I should be the last to complain. If George wants to steal oil from faraway places so I can continue to operate my ninja motorcycle, insanely overpowered as it is, for a few more years, why should I even care if a few thousand children die a horrible death as victims of this convenience? Why should I care if Hiroshima and Nagasaki were actually human test zones for our brand new nukes, and not actually required actions as reported by the vast majority of popular literature since then? So thousands of Japanese children were horribly mutilated and incinerated, and the land was laid waste, and the disease caused continues to this day. We were given the account that this is justified, and the Japanese recovered and produced my Kawasaki motorcycle, that I am able to use thanks to our neighbor's continuing dominance and a very handy supply of purloined gasoline from their latest murderous rampage. Several times now I have mentioned solipsism, and I think it's important here that the full account is given of what it is, so you may consider my personal dilemma in this issue. Solipsism comes from the Latin solus equals alone, solo, alone, plus ipse equals self, alone self. It's recorded with the Greek pre-Socratic sophist Gorgias, circa 483 to 375 BC, who is quoted by the Roman skeptic Sextus Empiricus as having stated, number one, nothing exists. Number two, even if something exists, nothing can be known about it. Number three, even if something could be known about it, that knowledge cannot be communicated to others. These three points are considered irrefutable within, say, semantics. Those things are what solipsism is, and as it stands in our schools as philosophy. The problem of other minds. Denial of the material existence is not enough to be a solipsist. The most controversial feature of this worldview is the worldview of the existence of other minds. We can never directly know of another's mental stability, qualia, or personal experience. Pardon me, qualia or personal experience are private and incorrigible. Another personal experience can only be known by analogy. For you, this means that you may look at another person and be quite convinced that they are not just a figment of your imagination, but there is absolutely no way that this can be proven. It also means that there is no way anything can be proved or even demonstrated. These statements may be argued in a semantic or philosophical sense, but cannot be refuted and must be accepted as quite possibly undeniable. If they are wrong, we cannot know this. Until I turned about 63, under the impression that this was an idea I invented and expressed as, I can look at you and never know if you can look back, that was what I said, I later discovered that this thought and many other thoughts under the guise of idealism had been written about for literally thousands of years, and even my take on it, called figmentalism, was not entirely new. I remind you that the third law of figmentalist laws of reality states that all of reality is collectively generated by all beings and the living mass of nature, which one runs directly counter to this, to solipsism, but is also unprovable or refutable. This all means that in our innocence we created battleships and airplanes and fought imaginary wars as children, wielding swords and killing the enemy, never realizing that they had wives and children, and our war machines would cause death and havoc among the innocent as well. Now we have grown and found that to maintain this myth of power struggles, there must be a subverted strength within our institutions that can cause these inequities to continue and yet maintain the facade that America stands for the free and the just. That, in fact, that we collectively enjoy the death and killing on our movie screens and in our literature gives us the clue that we are predisposed to illegitimacy and foulness and indeed a party to things like 9/11. Hiroshima and shock and awe, or pardon me, and Hiroshima and shock and awe, an unshakable symbol of our misdeeds for convenience, is in the oily TV image of the poor foundering duck that is covered with the stuff of greed. We are truly an enigma. Anyone could examine 9/11 and wonder how these three buildings managed to fall at near free fall speed, pulverizing everything into powder in a perfect demolition pattern and ostensibly caused by aircraft burning somewhere in the upper third of the two buildings, or of two of the buildings. Had these aircraft caused the two main towers of the World Trade Center to fall, they would have burned for a considerable amount of time and then buckled in the most damaged areas, and then the top portions would have actually toppled sideways and possibly caused the lower structures to sway and become damaged. This didn't happen, and the CNN coverage shows dozens of ordinary citizens exclaiming that suddenly there were explosions and that you could feel and hear plainly on the ground, and the result of which was the upper sections were collapsing in a planned demolition fashion, and then the lower sections, beginning at the main collision zones, were successively detonated, causing both towers to mysteriously collapse within a short period of each other. More mysteriously yet, The 9/11 Commission does not even comment on Building 7, short of saying that its collapse is unexplainable. And it's no wonder if you look carefully at the footage of its demise. A smaller silhouetted penthouse structure at the top of the 57-story building is not near any fires, but collapses first when the demolition begins, as is the case with the entire, with the center section being destroyed first, and the two sides of the building fall in on this area to minimize the footprint of damage, collapsing floor by floor, typically in a planned demolition that we have all seen many times on TV. This collapse was caused, so states the commission, by a few small fires on lower floors, even though there has never been a complete collapse of a modern building in history caused by fire. All the steel was immediately hauled away to cover up the pre-cutting of the central beam structure that can be plainly seen in much of the footage of the scene. The evidence of thermite that caused huge rivers of molten steel within the bases of the structure was also destroyed in this cleanup process, and all materials were not allowed public perusal but were shipped off for immediate remelting. The thermite was used in the apparent collapse to further melt the reinforcement, because simple burning aircraft and fuel cannot produce the temperatures needed to melt steel or cause massive concrete to spall into powder. The commission also misstated the structure, denying the central reinforcing beams, 47 in each building, that quite clearly did exist. Thermite leaves a trace in the steel. It melts. And as does the explosive demolition devices. Yet there were no such tests made on the remaining slag and the concrete. If there were, no findings were published by mainstream media. It is alleged it is illegal to dispose of all remaining material, as was done by presidential decree in this case, because the public needs to know how to prevent such a disaster in the future by studying the detail of the debris. Probably the most damning of all the evidence is the lack of it post 9/11. If the buildings had collapsed from the cause of the aircraft collisions, there would have been long steel beam structures that were bent and curled, representing the full height of the building, not conveniently short truck length pieces destroyed by the cleanup crews, so as to obviously hide any assistance the buildings had in coming down. The commission's findings are closed, and even eyewitnesses' accounts that tell of hearing explosions in the basements of the structure before the planes hit and were injured by the explosions have been discounted and disallowed. The cover-up is utterly botched and cannot have been done by anyone other than the government of the U.S. in power at the time. There were put options placed on the stock market for the two airlines involved by world bankers and investors prior to 9/11. And these are a matter of record, and examining these would reveal the insiders that were privy to this and partly responsible. Special insurance was arranged prior to the attack, and these were also a matter of record and not included in the commission report. A third of these so-called hijacked aircraft made a difficult maneuver to come around to the back of the Pentagon and smashed into the West Wing, conveniently being under construction at the time, and containing few Americans other than construction workers. This plane apparently vaporized along with its passengers, and the only traces left were some shards of metal and two engines that were rapidly destroyed by cleanup crews, and did not even appear to have come from that type of an aircraft. I think there was only one aircraft engine they found, and it wasn't the type that was in that supposed type of aircraft. All eyewitnesses were interrogated, and any movies or pictures were seized and came under the Official Secrets Act, disallowing the public to view them. What actually happened to flight, I don't have the number here, and the passengers is unknown, but most conspiracy theorists believe that a drone jet with a bomb on board actually hit the Pentagon, thus causing the giant explosion heard by witnesses. There are four main options that could explain 9/11. Number one, foreign terrorists commandeered four commercial airlines using utility knives without American official knowledge, thereby creating the conditions for the American government to retaliate by invading two oil-rich countries and seizing their oil. Number two, foreign terrorists did the above with the foreknowledge of the American government. Number three, foreign terrorists were assisted in doing the above. Number four, there were no foreign terrorists involved. It was an inside job conducted by the government to allow them to invade the two countries mentioned and seize their oil. Only the first option does not include the complete involvement of the American government and would not only be impossible to pull off given international espionage and the fact that there were multiple warnings stated that this very thing was about to happen. Not only that, the flight that supposedly crashed in the Pentagon was missing for about 50 minutes, without being intercepted by fighters based nearby that scrambled in about 15 minutes, or a special missile defense system around this most protected site. Clearly, this was an official American response to the growing shortage of oil in the U.S., and everyone knows this. We in the Western world are just as responsible as Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, Powell, Rice, and Wolfowitz et al., because we know the truth and do nothing about it. We pretend that we don't actually know. We pretend that this type of thing could never endanger our children. We pretend that the death of Afghani, Iraqi, and Japanese children and innocents far away is far away and not a concern as long as we have our SUVs. The CIA and the American government is not responsible for 9/11 and other atrocities. We are. Namron Sor.